Support for WVIK comes from Seifert Building Supplies, offering choices of cabinets, countertops, and hardware combinations to create or remodel a new kitchen. For an appointment with a design specialist, 563-391-5110. For more information, QuadCityKitchens.com.
Welcome to What's Happening QC, brought to you by Seifert Building Supplies. What's happening, Quad Cities? What's happening, Quad Cities? What's happening, Quad Cities? What's happening? What's happening? Davenport and Rock Island, Bettendorf.
Hey everyone, welcome to a new episode of What's Happening QC, sponsored by Seifert Building Supplies. My guests today are Alex Coates and Kyle Delvo of Doppelganger, what I call an instrumental band that is playing a lot here in the Quad Cities and the Iowa City area and all over the place. And I'm really looking forward to having a chat with you guys today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Of course.
Good to be here.
So let's start with a little bit of the background about Doppelganger and how did y'all meet?
Sure thing. Yeah. So Kyle and I met probably in like middle school, which would have been long ago now.
Quite some time.
Yeah. Maybe 2006 or seven, give or take.
Yeah. It's about, I'm not doing the math.
Yeah. Whatever. And so, we just kind of got together. We both found out we really liked similar music. And then we decided to try and do like the talent show at the middle school together. Mm-hmm. And just kept playing together ever since. And,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
So how did you guys get started on your instruments? Is there a family member that said, here, let's learn the bass?
My siblings and I all started with piano lessons growing up. And, it was good learning experience, but I quit that as soon as I possibly could. Mm-hmm. And my older brother actually learned electric guitar about a year prior. And I wanted to kind of follow him, but I didn't want to follow the exact same. So bass just kind of stuck out.
Right.
I'm not a huge fan of the spotlight whenever I can help it. So for me, that was kind of the perfect spot.
Well, you are in a trio, and so it's kind of hard to avoid that.
Yes, right? Yeah.
Yep.
Well, Alex, how about you? How did you get on the guitar?
So I started playing guitar when I was 11, I think. And so I wanted to play drums in the school band.
Okay.
Like it was transitioning from elementary to middle school, and the band director comes into the elementary school and shows us, hey, you can play all these instruments. I wanted to play drums, and they kind of told me no, because I had to have piano experience already.
Right.
So I was like, you know what, let's just ask my parents for a guitar for Christmas, and they got me one, thankfully.
And we'll start there.
And then, they quickly got me on lessons right after, and just been sticking with it ever since.
Awesome. I'm hoping there are a couple gearheads in my audience. So what was your first guitar?
It was a Lion by Washburn. It was like a starter pack, Strat pack that you can get with, like, I think my parents must have gotten at like Target or something like that. Just a little black and white Strat.
Very good.
Yeah.
How about your bass?
Yeah, my first one was, I don't even know the model, but it was a Yamaha. It was part of a
like
package
the YHR
deal.
YHR series or something like
that. Yeah, I think with like a cheap little amp and gig bag, it was $120 for everything. So it was about as cheap of a bass as I could get.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That's all you need.
But it worked.
So let's, we're going to dig a lot more into this in the second half of the show, but give us like the 2-minute story about how, you know, Doppelganger started and how things have progressed for you guys so far.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of started, I guess, back in when we were playing talent shows together. Then we played talent shows all through high school, had various different members and drummers. And after high school, we started Doppelganger with his older brother. And for a while, his older brother was doing vocals for us.
Okay.
And yeah, we put out like an EP and an album with that lineup. And a couple of years go by, you know, lineup changes happen, and started doing an instrumental project, changing everything over to just instrumental. In 2020, we put out a self-titled album. And since then, we've just been working on the same genre, instrumental, metal, essentially, and just been putting out singles. And yeah, up to now, we're working on another album.
Oh yeah,
and we're gonna see where that goes.
Yeah,
but that's kind of the quick little brief.
Very good.
Yeah.
Well, I have a ton more questions, and we're gonna share a bunch of terrible show stories, great show stories, what it's like to play on the road, and we're gonna do that after this message.
What's happening, Quad Cities? Is made possible by support from Seifert Building Supplies, inviting their homeowners and contractors to take their projects to the next level. Learn more at SeifertLumber.com.
You guys, you're now working on a new album. Where do you do your recording? I know that it's, when I've played in bands, you guys brought up a year earlier, and it's like, that's when I graduated from my master's degree. But anyway, I started playing in bands in like 1995.
Cool.
And the first band that I played in, we record on like a little three-track tape recorder. And like, you know, that had all of its fun problem solving. You're like, how many instruments can we fit on one track? And all this kind of stuff. And then obviously you had like the last one, you had to leave one completely open for like vocals. So it's like you really only had
two tracks to work with.
And then, you know, I think once, you know, I was in high school, that's when people started to get a little bit of the capabilities to start doing some home production. And I imagine that that has a large part in what you guys do. So tell me a little bit about what your guys's recording and writing process is.
Yeah. So starting out, I think when we were in middle school or early high school, we recorded onto a, I think it was a Digitech pedal.
Yeah.
Just onto one of our personal laptops. And I'm sure there was a way we could have better utilized that pedal, but being beginners, just starting out, we recorded one thing at a time and kind of built. And then, yeah, we've done a lot of recording just us in our own living spaces now. And
It
really lends nicely to our writing process.
Yeah, it's absolutely spoiled at this point that we can record at home and have unlimited amount of tracks, you know, on essentially free recording software that we use as well. We use Reaper to record with. And yeah, it's pretty much just we will record our demos ourselves in our homes. We'll send it to each other and kind of work that way. We'll be like, hey, I've got this riff idea. What do you think about it? Or I've got this half of a song. What do you think about it? Where should it go? And then we'll just kind of piece things together, especially since we live an hour apart now. It's just easiest to send things to each other online. But yeah, guitar gear anyway. I've got a Neural, the Quad Cortex by Neural DSP. And that's what we both run when we're playing live. And it's what I record with at home as well. And then once we get our demos and stuff recorded, we send it off to our mixing engineer. He lives in Ohio. His name is Nick Riggs. He's a absolute madman at mixing. So he is a great, great guy to work with. And then for drums, it's it kind of depends. Sometimes we'll have drums programmed. On the album we did in 2020, they were all actually recorded in studio. But yeah, for our latest singles, we've been doing programming drums. And I've had a couple professional drummers program drums for us so that it's not just a non-drummer trying to make drum parts.
The parts somehow come out sounding impossible
exactly
to actually be played. It's like, I was in the era in which like people started to transition into program drums, and it was always like us fighting over whether we thought the double bass was real or not.
Is a constant thing to this day.
And I remember there was this band called As Blood Runs Black.
They
had this like ridiculous double bass.
I know exactly what song he's talking about too.
And I saw the video and I saw them live, and the dude straight up really does it. So, I mean, that's pretty impressive. And, you know, I never saw anybody do double bass or like that rhythm with like a single pedal doing like the heel stuff. So
I know
drummers, man.
I can vividly remember my friend telling me about that song, and he's like, they have four bass pedals. And I'm like, that Probably not. Yeah. let me watch that video.
But it really sounds like
yes. Yeah.
So what are some of the bands that you guys you know, started to listen to that got you into this style of music?
Yeah. So when we first met, there's a lot of Green Day and Metallica, but I think the first band that I really got into as a musical inspiration was probably Avenged Sevenfold.
Okay.
Yeah.
From Guitar Hero. They had a song on there, and that's kind of where it all started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Metallica was pretty big for me when I was learning. It kind of started with Green Day, made me want to play guitar. And then after I started playing guitar, my dad listened to a lot of classic rock, both my parents, you know, AC/DC. I was a big AC/DC fan for a while and then got into Metallica. And then after learning Metallica songs, I'm just, you know, met up with him, and he's showing me Avenged Sevenfold and Trivium and Killswitch Engage and a couple other metalcore bands.
Yeah.
And then Guitar Hero came out around the same time, and like, wow, there's so much more stuff out there than I thought there was. Dragon Force was big, obviously, Guitar Hero.
That was in my dorm. Somebody woke up to a Dragon Force song every day. So it's
my goodness.
8 a.m. you're getting.
Yeah.
that's a lot of momentum to start the day.
Yeah.
A little much.
You need coffee when you got Dragon Force.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, those are a good chunk of bands I would listen to back then when we were getting together. And I still listen to them to this day. It's still some of my favorite bands.
Awesome. So I noticed like the brand of bass. Do you play a Kiesel?
Yes.
Are you a August Burns Red fan?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay. Oh yeah.
I remember it. I think he was the first bass player I saw using that.
I think his name's Dustin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, great band.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Fantastic. I love those guys. They're great.
So, you know, we were talking before we started to record that I've been fascinated with this instrumental genre. Do you guys call it that, or is that?
I've heard it called that.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's, for me, it kind of helps.
It's easier to say than instrumental metal.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's a mixture of progressive rock. And So, a thing that fascinates me about it, and we were talking earlier that, you know, being a classical musician, and playing composed music, like reading music, but also playing, you know, long form music that has thematic stuff that comes back and changes and that you can hold the interest, or the great composers can hold the interest of an audience by, you know, taking them through this kind of weaving forest of music. And I really like this genre because there's so much overlap between my two worlds, which was I always grew up playing in bands and all that kind of stuff. But then, you know, I have band practice on Sunday, and then on Monday I'm going to take my French horn lesson, and then Tuesday I have youth orchestra, Wednesday another band practice, shows on Friday.
Yeah.
And so, but those things always seemed like separate.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And then this kind of attracted me through the artist Pliny, who I got to meet in LA about 8 years ago. It was at a Guitar Center.
Sweet.
Serendipitous. I was there for another reason, and then I was like, just going to see if there was a show one night. And it came up that he was doing like a guitar demo at a Guitar Center in Pasadena.
Oh, that's awesome.
So
that's
anyway, cool. I got to chat with him and all that kind of stuff. And he talks a little bit about like how, you know, he does some notated work.
Yeah.
I know that he has some really kind of fun things that he uses. Like there's one song that I think he used his credit card numbers for like where the actual like
for the rhythm
accents are on those particular beats throughout stuff like that. So talk to me about your guys's transition from writing music that had a singer. You know, how do you approach this? Because, you know, I got to see you guys live.
Yeah.
What was that, 2 weeks ago now?
Yeah.
And like your guys's shows, I think a band within this genre could very easily be boring.
Sure.
Yeah.
But you guys are definitely not boring. So how do you guys approach that? Because it is, I mean, it is something you probably have to keep in mind.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess it kind of is, when you take away the vocals, there's an empty space that needs to be filled. And for the most part, I kind of throw in some lead guitar parts to fill that void.
Right.
And it'll usually kind of take the place of a vocal melody, almost like we have a chorus that's a guitar instead of a singer.
Right.
And we'll bring that part back to be, you know, give people an idea of, hey, here's that part earlier. Like, right. You know, make sure that it's cohesive. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we had to fill a lot of room with synthesizers. We have a lot of synthesizer programming that Kyle does a lot of. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, adding more lead layers essentially kind of made up for the lack of vocals, I think.
Yeah.
But structurally, they're still very similar to a lot of metalcore bands, but just with more like lead work, I would say.
Yeah, right. Yeah, definitely. It wasn't a huge change switching from the vocals oriented songwriting to what we do now, because, well, I shouldn't say vocal oriented, because even then we were guitar oriented. We wrote guitars first.
True,
and right. Then everything else stacked on top
yeah.
of it.
Yeah.
So I think the biggest adjustment is at that time, we in for sake of not being boring, we wrote kind of more progressive song structures. Mm-hmm. So since then we've kind of fallen back a little bit to where it's, you know, we don't need to go to 7/4 and then
right.
this one really cool riff only plays once.
Right.
So it makes it easier to being able to come back around. And if we are playing a chorus or something that's played for a second time, you know, introducing a second lead or talking about how we right. can make it sound a little bit different, mm-hmm. And not just be, oh, it's this again.
Right. Yeah, instead of just copying and pasting the same exact section and mm-hmm. repeating it after a verse happens, like, here's the chorus, and then we'll paste it over here. We'll have the chorus happen, but it mm-hmm. might be, oh, it's the chorus, but the drums are doing a slightly different beat, or yeah. there's now a synthesizer on top of the chorus. Mm-hmm. Things like that to help the listener kind of, just not get bored after hearing the same thing.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I noticed that, you know, the style of playing with the three of you, including your drummer, which you'll
yeah.
tell us about hopefully here in a minute.
Yeah, but, absolutely.
You're all very active. Mm. Like, your parts are very active. And
true.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, you play a lot of notes for a bass player.
I do. I should do. Yeah.
It's my fault. It's
yeah, it is fault. Completely his fault. Right. Yeah. I maintain that I would have plateaued a long time ago.
If he didn't keep making you get better.
Yeah. Yeah. He'll keep sending me stuff. And almost every time it's like, I don't know why you do this to us.
Hey, somebody's got to do it.
You ever heard about the root note? What if we stay with that for a bit?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, you know.
Exactly.
You can play the root note.
I can, but I don't. It does get boring.
Yeah.
So, you guys are the official members of the band, and you mm-hmm. work with somebody who's your live drummer.
Yeah.
How does that relationship go? And I looked him up on Facebook, and it seems like he's played in a lot of bands, and
yep.
He really killed it at the show.
He's incredible.
So tell us about him.
Tim Gorman lives in Michigan, and yeah, he's like 23 years old, absolutely monster of a drummer. I think he's been playing since he was like three, if I remember correctly, wow. is what he told me. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he's just super, super skilled and talented. He's played in a lot of local bands in his area and done, like, I think he told me he's done one tour before. And then so, crazy story about Tim. I met him last year for the first time. There's a band from Minneapolis called By the Thousands mm-hmm. that asked Doppelganger to come on a 4-day long run with them.
Yep.
And last year, sadly, Kyle mm-hmm. had some health issues, like mm-hmm. couldn't make the shows. And so I go out and meet Tim the first day. The first day I met him, we practiced together and he played the set, like just nailed it.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was the day before these 4 days. And then so we go out and play 4 shows in a row together and he just kills it every single time. So right. it's like people are asking us, hey man, how long have you guys played together? And I was like, it's been like 2 days.
Yesterday.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So Tim is an absolute monster. Can't say enough good things about him. And we're really lucky to be able to work with him. And yeah, he is just a great dude. Yes.
So with you know, you guys being an hour apart and then he's in Michigan,
yeah,
how do you guys bring it all together when it's time to go play live?
Well,
he does a lot of it I think by ear.
Yeah,
we'll have songs that have drums already written
mm-hmm.
and you know, when we first, I think you reached out to him on Instagram or something like that, because
yeah.
you were friends, and sent him over I think the idea and the proposal of how would you like to fill in and play some shows with us. And I think yeah. was it the same day?
The timing was pretty crazy because yeah, I asked him if he would be down to do it. And then he said yes. And he sent me a song, like the whole I Was God Once is a song that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And he covered that in, by the time my shift was done at work, he sent me a video of it. And wow. I was like, yeah. oh my God.
Same day.
Yeah.
And it was good. It was perfect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He nailed it.
So do you guys do some live rehearsing right before a show, or is it like,
yeah,
you guys feel like you have your individual parts handled and it goes together pretty easy? Or?
Yeah, we definitely all, so we try and get together if we can, because that, for me, it helps alleviate some nerves if we can play together before the show.
Right.
We play to a click track. So we all listen to the click track and we listen to the set list and play along to it at home. And then when we get together, we just essentially just play our parts, and it always seems to work out. So far, so good.
Is there any amount of like spontaneity within your shows, you know, working with a click track and playing with these backing tracks?
I would say if anybody is spontaneous, it's probably Tim. Tim definitely will throw in some new fills every now and then and kind of change things up. But I am pretty much just locked into like my notes. I'm just trying not to mess up as much as possible.
And for me, it's like, unless you consider mistakes spontaneous, it's pretty just by the book.
Just locked in.
Yeah,
I suppose that's a lot like what I do on stage at, with the Quad City Symphony. It's
for
like,
sure.
I don't get to improvise Beethoven.
Yeah.
So we were also talking beforehand a little bit about the generation shift between my generation, y'all's. And, you know, when my band Death Virginia toured, I had the like the really tall bass cab. What's it? The 810 plus like the big Ampeg head.
The SVT.
I had like a rack mount tuner for a while, but also a pedal tuner, and then this like an overdrive pedal. I don't believe we ever went on a tour, and our longest one was 6 weeks. I don't believe we ever went on a tour in which the band returned home with the same equipment.
Really?
And so it's like you have an off day and you're in Nashville and you stop by Guitar Center and there's a good deal on something, but you need to like sell part of your rig to get the new
thing
traded. And, you know, we had, you know, Orange amps were huge. One of our guitar players was really obsessed with a brand called Hughes and Kettner.
Oh yeah, they're still around.
Yeah, and so amps and cabs and all that kind of stuff were a huge part of a band building their live sound. Like a 5150 PV head sounds so different from everything else, and it's to me like one of the heaviest sounding.
I'm using a model of the 5150.
Oh, that's great.
And
I think my first band, our guitar player had a those blue voodoos. I think was that Crate that made those.
Yeah, that was Crate.
So anyway, gear in terms of like physical gear. When we toured, 15 passenger van, big trailer.
Yeah,
you know? And we were also talking about, you know, our everybody helps everybody load in except the singer because of course he's cool and got stuff to do, right? But anyway, so you know, when I saw you guys play, like everyone who was on that bill, the stage setups themselves like did contain, or at least on in the front, that there were a lot of amps and cabs and stuff like that. So there's a big transition, I think, in that. And you know, we were talking, and I think that, you know, one of the positives for it is that like when I was playing, I started maybe the first 5 or so years going like, I can't hear anything when I have earplugs in.
Sure.
And I like remember some shows where it's like, you get that, like your ear like really goes. And so for me, like we'll have you on again when I'm 80 and see if I can hear you guys.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, so I know the on stage sound is much more controlled. It's much safer for human beings to be doing that.
Yeah.
But, you know, tell me a little bit about like, how has your guys' onstage setup changed, if it has? Let's swim through the gear onstage thing.
Yeah, so it's changed quite a bit. Being a bassist, I, you know, starting out, I thought it was pretty cool to bring, I had a 2x15 or 15x2. I don't know how those dimensions go anymore. There were two 15-inch speakers.
Yeah, and then
I had a big head with like a rack mount tuner, a couple distortion pedals, compressor, things like that. And I also had a 8x10 dummy cab that I would carry with, and
just for show.
Just because it looked cool to have that balance on right and left side.
Because
we had two guitarists at that time too, so you know, it looked cool. It was all right for the short term. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, you play a couple basement shows, you play a couple second floor shows where you're taking it up the stairs and it's like, there's got to be an easier way.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm getting sick of this pretty quick. And now we've got it pretty well streamlined.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to have a 412 cabinet or two of them, actually.
Mm-hmm. The full stack.
Yeah. One for either side of the stage. And then plugging in, I guess. Way back, I had a crate amp with just some distortion pedals in front of that. After that, after I got rid of the crate amp, I switched over to modeling. So I got a Helix from Line 6. Mm-hmm. And for a while, I was just running that into a power amp and running that into my guitar cabinets.
Right.
But then after so many shows, I decided one time, let me just bring no cabinets. Let me just try and see what everybody's trying right now, mm-hmm. which is just using the modeler and just running that to the Frema house.
Right.
And when I did that, I had a, I don't know what it was. It was an epiphany, but it sounded great. Like it somehow sounded better than it did with my cabinets. Mm-hmm. I didn't really have the nicest of cabinets in the world. So maybe that was what it was, but man, yeah. Once I plugged into the PA just straight with the Helix, it was a game changer. And then now I don't have the Helix anymore. I've got the Quad Cortex from Neural DSP. And it's even smaller than the Helix and it can fit in our rack drawer. Mm-hmm. And then Kyle and I both plug into that and that's our guitar and our bass rig.
Wow.
And we're emulating a 5150 for my guitar. And then I'd have to go in and look for, I think it's going to, it's doing some dark glass, I think, stuff for bass.
Yeah. Just a high gain.
I'd have to go in and look again. We made the patch like a year ago, but, yeah. So it's cool to not have to lug around these giant speakers and, you know, break our backs, putting them on stage and in the van and bringing them upstairs and all that. But yeah, I mean, it sounds great as long as the venue has a nice PA.
Right. That was my follow-up question is like, you know, we'll talk about like going to shows and not really knowing what to expect. And like, I mean, there were a couple times where we booked shows with good bands and then it turned out it was like a kid's birthday party, you know, and like fun stuff like that. And so like, how has that been for you guys? Have you been running into venues where it's like, oh, this might be a little sketch or how do you deal with it?
Yeah, it's you just have to deal with it and just do what you can. Mm-hmm. We have been very lucky that since we've been doing just no cabinets, like 90% of our shows have been gone off without a hitch. No problem.
Yeah.
Good. But recently we did have a show where the sound system or the equipment wasn't working properly. And for some reason or other, Kyle and I, our guitar signal was is getting into our ears because we have our own little in-ear monitoring system with our rack. Mm-hmm. But I'm fairly certain we played this almost entire show without having the actual guitar and bass coming through the PA.
Yes.
And the audience may have just been hearing the drums and the pre-recorded guitar that I play along with for harmonies and stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
And people told us we sounded great. Don't get me wrong. It was a fun experience, but it was a nightmare while I was on stage.
Yes.
Well, it's certainly better than like them hearing just drums and you guys dancing around a little bit.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. People still got a show at least.
Yes. Yeah. It was a little bit of an adventure too, because we've got it pretty streamlined. We have four outs that, you know, they just got to plug it in and do whatever they do on their board. And for the most part,
it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah. But as we're setting up, that we didn't have too much of a sound check.
No.
And as kind of running through some basic things, there were some stage PAs and
the monitors.
Yeah. And so he was asking, like, do you want any of your like the tracks or anything in that? I think we both mouthed like just a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think by a little
bit,
that was interpreted as loud as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So as we were playing, like we don't really need stage sound because we've got it in our in-ears.
Right.
Yeah. But it was so loud that there were times where I'd have to step out to one side or another because I'm getting blasted by so much sound I can't hear myself standing in like a reasonable position on stage.
Right. Well, it was in-ear monitors.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and I was cranked all the way up as loud as I could go.
Wow.
I don't know what happened that night, if there was some bad power at the stage or something, but also our in-ears were fading in and out.
Like
there, and our drummer, Tim, he told us afterwards he really couldn't hear the click track whatsoever when we were playing. Mm-hmm. So we were kind of lucky that those monitors were blaring because he was using the monitors just to play along to.
Right.
Because he couldn't hear anything else.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean,
kind of worked out.
I mean, he nailed it.
He did.
He's incredible. Like, I wouldn't be able to do that.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So
a lot of pressure on a drummer. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. No doubt.
Yeah.
let's talk a little bit about like what the business is like for you guys. What would be a dream for you guys in terms of taking this project to a certain level?
Yeah. I mean, the dream is being able to, if we could get on tour consistently, mm-hmm. sell enough t-shirts and make enough money to make a living. Like I work at Best Buy. Mm-hmm. And if I can make as much money as I make at Best Buy playing music, that is the dream for me. Like if I could just get by playing music, that'd mm-hmm. be, that'd be a dream.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Slowly but surely working towards it. You know, it's been, mm-hmm. been lucky enough to be endorsed by my favorite guitar brand along the way, mm-hmm. Kiesel Guitars, you know, a couple String Joy has given me some strings and things like that. And I've gotten to work with some pretty popular artists. It's music industry is interesting. That's for sure. It's just taking it one day at a time, trying to make progress.
I'll quit sharing my old timer stories.
No, please do.
Yeah, go for it.
So Death Virginia was, I think, the band that I was, quote unquote, most successful. Mm-hmm. Because we were in college and we could actually go and do things. When you're in high school, you, like where I was from, like we took it as far as we could, which is like, we had like three good scenes in the state of West Virginia and we play shows there. But mm-hmm. In terms of like, you know, dad's not going to take us on a 3-week tour.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nor is a band going to take 16-year-olds on a 3-week tour generally. Yes, right. So, you know, when I started with Death Virginia, the metric that everybody was using at that time to get some kind of tour management mm-hmm. was MySpace plays.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And
yeah.
So like, yeah. you know, our MySpace page, like we had parties at our house where everybody would bring their laptops over we would just go through MySpace and look for people.
Okay.
And like if they looked like, or their profile looked like they might like
metal.
What we were doing, like we would friend request them and then hopefully get some plays out of it. So it's like,
yeah,
you know, I'm sure that there's computer programs that can help you do that now. But we were just straight up doing it by hand.
Yeah.
And then, you know, also really mattered like who you recorded with.
Mm. Sure.
And so, you know, we were really lucky that we got to go and record in Connellsville, Indiana with Joey Sturgis.
Oh, that's cool. Awesome.
Yeah. You know, who did all the early Devil Wears Prada.
Yeah, he's still kicking it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I see that he does a lot of modeling packs and stuff like mm-hmm. that he's doing. And like we recorded our album the week after We Came as Romans did their first one.
Oh, cool. All
this kind of stuff. So,
all right, right on.
So that's what we tried to use to leverage to get shows. And it's then, like when we had, there's a booking agency that booked like grindcore bands and called BA Booking. Okay. And they're like, we won't even talk to you until you have like 30,000 plays on MySpace or something like that. And
so
like we were like headed towards that. But
sure.
So even when you get to that point and you're getting like a 6-week tour with 50% of the shows are solid.
Yeah.
The other 50%, you're probably booking yourself to get from one place to the other. And
right.
for us, it was like always kind of a struggle.
Yeah.
Because like, you know, you know, when you're talking about showing up and finding a PA, that's not going to really work for you guys. Like
yep.
for us, we would just show up to shows that, you know, the money that they said that we would get wasn't there. The people that they say would be there weren't there. And, you know, like one of the worst ones for me was we showed up to someplace in Kentucky and this kid booked, I don't know if you guys know this band, but Gorilla Biscuits was a really old school punk band.
That sounds really familiar.
That then the singer then did a band called Rival Schools. I don't know if you know that one. But anyway, it's like punk into more like indie rock kind of stuff. And so like for us, this is like legendary. It's like getting booked on a show with like Minor Threat or something.
Sure.
Like that.
Yeah.
And so we're like, damn, this is going to be really, really,
really
great.
Cool show. Yeah.
And we showed up. And the address was this kid's house.
Okay.
And there was like a tent set up in his driveway.
All right.
And like just like a rented PA from like the music store or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the worst, that wasn't even the worst part. And it's outside in the middle of the summer, hot as heck.
Yeah.
The worst part was that the kid and his mom knew about it, but the dad didn't.
Oh, no.
And the dad was like a shift worker and he came home mid-afternoon and there's like a bunch of like random kids just hanging out in their house. Absolutely. And he's like, yeah. Like, the line was, it's funny, we talk about this to this day. He's like, yeah, well, guys, I'm going to need you to get up on out of here because, you know, I just got off work and I want to watch TV without y'all in my house. So, like, we ended up having to, like, just chill in the van for the rest of the day, man, and then played this show. And it, like,
that's insane.
It turned out to be okay, but it was, like, just those awkward moments where you're, like,
that's
you're
so
just
funny.
Running around the country asking for people to take care of you.
Basically, right? Essentially, yeah.
Yeah.
So, what's that's your guys' worst tour story? I
mean, first off the top of my head is... when we first started playing shows, we were both 18, mm-hmm. and we had a show out in, kind of the Chicago area.
Yeah.
And so we were prepping all day. I think we even got together to practice ahead of time. We loaded up, we drove the 3 hours or whatever to get over there. We show up for load in and, I think it was like our first person we had an interaction with asked how, like how old we were.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a bar venue.
Now I know the story.
And so we're like 18, but you know, we're part of the band, like we're not going to be drinking or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And I guess this bar had just been like dinged for serving minors in the last like week or two.
Yeah.
So they're like, I'm sorry, you guys just can't even come in.
Yeah, we weren't even allowed. Yeah, that was so crazy.
So we just turned around and I don't even think we had loaded out of our vehicle.
No, yet. We were just trying to walk in and see what the venue was like.
Yeah.
And then they stopped us and they're like, how old are you guys?
Young men.
Yeah. So then we drove on home.
Yeah. Wow. That was fantastic.
Right.
Yeah. Good it was Lord. Just like a local, it was basically just a bunch of local bands playing a show.
Yeah.
But they probably should have asked us how old we were.
Right.
I guess.
What's the furthest you guys have gone for a show at this point?
I think the farthest we've gone was Fargo, North Dakota. It's like 8 or 9 hour drive, give or take. That was Kyle wasn't there, but that was last year. It was just me and Tim. Mm-hmm. And once again, I met Tim like the day beforehand and then we're in the van for 8 hours to go to North Dakota. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome.
Some good windshield time to get to know each other.
Absolutely.
But we drove 12 hours to upstate New York from Morgantown, West Virginia.
Okay, yeah.
Because again, it was like in that time where you just want to play with good bands.
Yeah,
it's like
absolutely.
That show had a band called Amir on it.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And so anyway, we were like, oh, we gotta play with Amir. It's great.
Sure thing. Yeah.
So we drive up there, and the kid promises up the gas money and all this kind of stuff. And we get there, we do the show.
Yeah.
The biggest mistake that we made was not understanding how like power breakers work.
And so
is like, we need to have like stage lights, so we like took these giant floods with us.
What happened?
Okay. And then we have a guy in the back who's doing like power strip, like
no way
on.
Okay.
And we tripped the breaker 3 times during our set, and it was like it mattered so much to us that we tried it 2 more times in the set.
That's
like,
so
okay,
funny.
No more lights. But
that is
the worst part of that story was I had finals the next day and the kid was like, the show didn't do as well as we thought. So there's no money. And our guitar player is like, I think the statute of limitations is now passed. But our guitar player is like, we're getting in the van.
Mm-hmm.
You're coming with us and we're going to go get some money out of the ATM.
Yeah. That's what you got to do sometimes.
So we drove the kid to the ATM and we got $100 for her gas.
But yeah. Like, yeah, man.
Gosh,
you got to do something. You can't just bail out on the whole thing.
100%.
So. Yeah.
That reminds a lot of there's a show we played, and it was actually one we put on, and you know, we had all these great like aspirations for what the show was going to do and for the local community.
Mm-hmm.
And we partnered with a local promoter who was going to front a lot of the costs for paying for the headlining bands and things like that.
Yeah.
And the show itself was pretty good. We put on almost a festival lineup where I think there were
eight or 10
bands that played, probably even more than that.
Mm-hmm.
But about 3/4 of the way through, almost immediately after we played, the headliners were up and the promoter just decided, I'm not spending any more money. And so both of the headlining bands need to be paid yet.
Oh,
and so then there was just the stress of, well, what are we going to do here? And I think between the 6 band members we had at the time, we just each paid out like $200 a piece just to be like, I'm sorry, guys. Like you drove all the way here.
The promoter didn't even tell us, no, we're not paying it. He just left the venue.
Yeah, he was just gone.
We had to get a hold of him again somehow.
Right.
Our
guitarist at the time, I think, drove over to his house or something like that to try and get a hold of him. But
yeah. That was a disaster. Yeah. That was terrible.
We probably paid out $1,000 just
out of pocket.
Good Lord.
Just to make it happen.
Right.
Just to be like, you know, thanks for coming, guys.
Yeah, right. Sorry. We still didn't get you your guarantee.
You guys don't have a bad name out there.
Yeah, pretty much is what we were. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's wrap up with a little bit more happier.
Sure. Happier sure.
Absolutely.
So I've now seen two shows at the Capitol Theater, and one of them was your guys's. Mm-hmm. Let's localize it a little bit. Tell what was your experience playing at the Capitol? What's it like playing on that stage?
It was really cool. I've seen a good handful of shows there. Some of my favorite bands are playing there, like Era and Devil Wears Prada. Yep. And mm-hmm. A couple of years ago I saw Silent Planet there.
Oh wow.
And it was really cool to be on a stage that big.
I think Polaris was on that show too.
I think you might be right.
Great bands.
Absolutely. It's really cool that theater is bringing so many metal shows through there. The fact that we were able to hop on one, we got asked to open. I was just like immediately, yes, yeah, absolutely. Right. We will do that. 100%. And it was really cool. Just seeing the inner workings of that venue. Mm-hmm. The sound guys were great. You know, everybody working at the venue was great. Security even told us afterwards. It was like, just so you guys know, this was really fun working for you guys. I'm like, that's awesome.
That's
really
cool. It's fun working for you.
Yeah. So everybody was super friendly to us. And we had a great crowd reaction. Met a lot of people. Met you there, you know?
Yep.
It was a great time. It was a great time.
Yeah, all in all, it was an amazing show. Like Alex was saying, that everyone that we interacted with that was a part of the Capitol Theater was so incredibly professional, and you could tell there's a lot of moving pieces being a theater of that size and the amount of employees that are staffed out for it. Mm-hmm. But there was not a single hiccup. Everything went so smoothly because everybody's a professional and they know what to do.
And it makes your lives so much nicer
and
allows you to actually focus on playing well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It could have very easily been a very overwhelming show, but it wasn't at all, just because
it was smooth.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
What was the interactions between the other bands like? Did you get to hang a little bit and do all that stuff?
Yeah, during soundcheck, the guys in Hate Division were the other local band, and got to catch up with them. We've been playing shows with a couple of their members for years and years.
Oh, yeah.
Because they've got their lineup is essentially a couple other bands that used to be around, and they kind of brought themselves together to form a new band. And then the guys in the Browning and the Defect were all extremely nice.
Yeah, they were.
I think his name's Johnny from the Browning. Yeah, he was super complimentary towards us. And he was telling Tim, that our drummer, he was like, as we were sound checking, Johnny was like kind of right behind Tim. And before we went on stage, he was like, just so you know, you sound amazing. You're going to kill it tonight. Yeah. I'm like, that's super cool to see.
Don't take our drummer.
Yeah. It's just, but really cool to see, bands of that level, going out of the way to talk to the opening bands and be friendly with us and everything 100%. Like that. So turns out we had a couple mutual friends too. So that's kind of cool.
Great. Yeah. Well, hopefully that bears some more shows.
Down. Yeah, I hope so.
Oh, hope
yeah.
so.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the that. Browning was really, really cool to watch.
Yeah.
It was a really fun show. Absolutely.
That one was, I was not familiar with them at all, but my friend who took me to the show really, really liked them. And so they're interesting, just the amount of genre mashing within that band.
The electronic influence is really big.
A lot of like almost trap music in there.
Like a mix between EDM and metal.
Yeah.
You know,
100%.
Yeah, like rave music almost. Yeah.
So yeah, they were really great. And also just like really cared about everybody having a good time.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You know, but like not in a way where it's like everybody having a good time tonight. It's like he was having fun, we were all having fun.
Mm-hmm.
I think I actually got into the pit for a minute.
Oh, nice.
It's been a long time.
Were you the guy in the unicorn costume?
Yeah. No, but I wish I was. I got some really good pictures of that guy. Nice. But also it was really fun to watch. That's why I love like all ages shows.
Mm-hmm.
Is like you got to see like dads bringing kids, and like
a couple of one of those girls, one of the moms was like, this is their first ever metal show and they want a picture with you. And I'm like, that's just so cool.
Yeah,
that's
awesome.
Really cool.
Yeah,
well, I saw like a dad taking his kid into the pit probably for the kid's first time.
Oh.
I was like, let him go for a minute, then it starts to get a little hairy,
then you bring him right back.
So I don't know, it was just a fun experience.
So
I look
cool.
forward to going out to that venue again, and I hope I get to see you guys there again.
Yeah, absolutely.
You'd be happy to play there. Yeah, anytime.
Anytime.
Yeah. I'll let them know because they come on my show a lot.
Oh,
hey,
really?
Book doppelganger.
Yeah. We'll play.
They said ahead of time. Yeah. Don't even worry about the date. We'll play.
We'll just be there.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much for stopping by today.
Yeah, thank you.
I had a really great time talking with you, and I hope to have you on again sometime, maybe when that album finishes up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome.
No, this has been fun.
Well, thank you guys so much for listening to us, watching us on YouTube. I hope that you'll subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Click the subscribe button on YouTube. And thank you so much to Seifert Building Supplies for sponsoring the show. And have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you for listening to What's Happening QC. Our theme music is by Centaur Noir and Del Rockford. WHQC is produced by WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Support for WVIK comes from Seifert Building Supplies, presenting a newly remodeled kitchen showroom in Davenport. Seifert has 130 years experience in kitchen design, with design specialists on site. More information is available at QuadCityKitchens.com.